Good morning. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so pleased to have in our studio for our show today, Mr. Rahul K., who's the CEO of Suki. And we're going to learn a lot about Suki in regards to mindfulness and how it helps people to be better performance, not just at work, but in life. Rahul, welcome to the program. Thank you for coming on to talk to us about your wonderful new venture, Suki.
I'm happy to be here, Darrell. Thanks so much for having me.
That's great. So before we jump into Suki, could you share with our audience, really, I mean, you have a very, very impressive background. Share with us about your background, but also after that, how did you come to launch Suki?
Yeah. And so I would, you know, I'll sum it up quickly, bro, rather than reading down the laundry list of my CV. I have a background in clinical psychology, mental well-being, as well as I have a background in Eastern wellness. I think a lot of that is because my parents were from India. They were immigrants. And so I was first generation here, raised in New Jersey. And so I got exposed to a lot growing up. I got exposed to yoga. I got exposed to meditation and mindfulness training. And so I have a background in that as well. And then I would say my professional life has definitely steered me towards building community. And so whether that's organizational design or organizational psychology or looking at different factors that drive diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging within different industries or different companies, those are, you know, the realms and areas where I thrive and which most excite me.
Okay. Wow. And so how did you come about to launch Suki?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I feel like it's a lifetime in the making. Well, I feel like any time we're at a different place in our career, it only makes sense retrospectively. It only makes sense when we look backwards. And so it all depends on where we want to draw that line in the sand in terms of this is what motivated me to launch it. For today's discussion, I'll start it with really this idea of kind of going from one pressure cooker to the next pressure cooker. I studied at MIT, and at MIT, they have this phrase, they say, it's like drinking water from a fire hose. And it's this euphemism of, we're gonna intentionally overwhelm you. We're gonna give you so much information and so many opportunities that you're gonna feel a little bit out of control. And it's exciting. It's nerve-wracking all at the same time. And then from there, I became a strategy consultant at a firm company, McKinsey. And that's another pressure cooker. That's another place where people come. It's almost like this is the foundation for your education. Now let's take you to finishing school. Let's take you to management or strategy consulting, where you can actually take deep dives into the skill sets. And so really going from one of those to the next, just hopping around, just putting myself in the most extreme circumstances that I could, that's when I really started to realize that, A, I'm starting to feel burnt out. I'm starting to see some of those symptoms. You know, you're seeing cracks in the foundation. Not everyone can go on all 10 cylinders all the time. And so that also just reawoke that connection I had to mental well-being and resilience training. And so that was one thing. And another thing that I learned from there is that, well, the tools that were being offered were somewhat generic in nature. They were out of the box. And so I wanted something that was comprehensive, that was unique. It was personalized to who I was as a person in my lived experience. And that inspired me to create an entity, an institution where cultural understanding was not separate from our overarching sense of well-being, but these were two different components that needed to work together in order for somebody to feel like they have a grasp on what's going on, to feel like they're thriving. And so that's really where Suki came about.
Okay. Define for us mindfulness. A lot of people say it, but I'm curious as to how you define it.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a term that gets thrown out all about, and a lot of people will interchange it with meditation or things like that, or they might even say it as an adjective, like, "Oh, you need to be more mindful about something." And so, what does that actually really mean? For me, there's a few definitions I like. I think my favorite is from really just from going on autopilot to actually becoming extremely aware of what we're doing. And so it's really this shift from operating on muscle memory. And in fact, a lot of us are operating throughout our day on muscle memory. In fact, 40% of every activity that we do is from a learned habit. And when you're doing something that's a habit, well, I just did a deep dive on habit formation and the science behind habit. It's interesting. A different part of your brain actually acts. It's not one that's that frontal lobe that's really deciding and making a judgment call on, is this worth doing or not? And so 40% of the time, we're just automatically seeing a trigger and then going into an activity. So we're operating on that muscle memory. And then on top of that, there's actually a study done by Harvard Medical that showcased about half the time when we're doing something, we're actually thinking about something completely different. And so it's a little bit scary if you imagine all those times you're on the road and your mind is just wandering, what's for dinner tonight? What am I going to do? You know, why did I get into that fight 2 years ago? Whatever it is, you're not thinking about the car that's merging into your lane. And I feel like what mindfulness does, it's that training, right? It's that training of going from that mindset of not actually being present to really becoming aware. And so that moment to moment objective awareness of what's going on right now, what's happening internally, what's going on with your mind, what kind of thoughts are you thinking, how's your body feeling? And it's just a reset. It's putting yourself back into your body. And that's why I love it, because you notice how quickly when you practice mindfulness, your mind will immediately wander to something else, and that's totally fine. But the practice is really about recognizing that happened and then bringing it back there. It's this yo-yo you're playing with your mind. I've once heard it being described as holding a live fish in your hands. That's us trying to tame that thought machine known as our mind.
Now, something that you just said, okay, we talked about mindfulness, and you said sometimes people might not confuse it, but consider it to be meditation, but also staying present. And it seems that seems to me to be conflicting, because if I'm staying in the present, let's say if I'm talking to you now, so I'm staying in the present, but if I'm meditating, I'm focused on clearing my mind. I don't know. Help me out here.
Yeah. And so let me define some of these things that might clear up some of that confusion. So this is your classic square rectangle type of definition. And then let me make sure I get it right. I think it's every square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square, right? And so mindfulness is very much a type of meditation, but meditating is not the same as mindfulness.
Okay.
And so when someone says they're being mindful, it simply means they're being aware of the present.
They're focused. They're staying in the present. They're not thinking about what they're having for dinner.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so in the main thing about what they're focusing on is that can be a variety of different things, right? That could be, you just took a sip from your coffee or your water. That could be that. That's you being practicing mindfulness is noticing the taste, noticing the journey of that liquid down your throat, noticing how the temperature that the cup is feeling, noticing what your body is reacting to as it goes into your stomach, all those things that we normally do not pay attention to because we can only pay attention to so much. We only have so much cognitive bandwidth. But mindfulness is about being super present to that moment. Now, you might think, oh, if you're talking to your partner and she's like, hey, be present, stop looking at your phone. And so she's telling you, that thing I want you to be present about is me. I want you to focus on me. When you're practicing mindfulness, there's this mentality that really the most important person in your life, if I were to ask you, who's the most important person in your life? The answer is always the same. It's always whoever you're talking to in that moment. All those other people, they don't matter, right? They don't matter in that moment. It's not about the past. It's not about the future. You're kind of staying right in the present, wedged between that. And the reason they do that is because if you focus on the past, that can lead to depressive thoughts. That can lead to, why did I say that when I shouldn't have said that? I can't believe my, you know, my mom did that to me. All these things, that all these causes of trauma, right? We replay those movies in our head over and over again. And so that's what happens when we focus on the past. If we focus on the future, who's going to win the election? What's going on with the economy? You know, all of these things. When we're focused on the future, well, that is a buildup anxiety, right? That's buildup of stress. And so mindfulness is allowing us to not focus on your present, not focus on the past, truly stay present. And when you're staying on the present, you're going to go from an operating mode of multitasking, continuously multitasking, to the opposite, which is single tasking. Single tasking means we are only going to focus on one thing, whatever that thing is. I would say the most common thing that people focus on is their breath, because their breath is continuous. It is something real. It's tangible. It's right in, underneath your nose. You can't deny it. It's not, you don't need faith to focus on your breath. You don't need to visualize anything or say a mantra. It's just right there. And on top of that, your breath is one of the only activities in your body that you can do that's voluntary as well as involuntary. Because so you're choosing to breathe as well as you are doing it this entire conversation without even knowing you're doing it, because it's sustaining you. And because it's doing both of those, it's the bridge between our conscious and our subconscious minds.
You know, my sister would love this conversation because she has been my mentor and tutor since I was a little boy. She actually had me read a book in the fifth grade called I'm Okay, You're Okay, you know? Mm-hmm. But she always talked about the perfect present. And the perfect present is this focus on what's right in front of us for that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Suki. Suki is a platform, and Suki is a platform is that you license to companies as well as to individuals, or is it just B2B?
For the most part, it's a B2B SaaS platform, but I would say it's a solution rather than a platform. The way I describe it is, you know, we're almost like a boutique firm that works with both academic institutions as well as companies, where we craft out solutions to both mitigate the causes and drivers of burnout in their company, as well as build community. We know that their employees, well, their employees in general are not feeling cared for. Right? They don't feel like their employers care about them. And on top of that, they're feeling burnt out. It's been a hard few years. And so what we do is we help build community for this workforce that's increasingly diverse. It's increasingly remote. And what they expect from employers is far different than what was expected prior, right? We're living in a generation where we have four different generations represented in the workforce. We have Gen Z all the way up to boomers. And that is one of the first times that's ever happened in the modern workforce. And so because of that, what was the expectations from before aren't nearly the same as the expectations for who makes up the majority of the workforce, which are millennials. Mm-hmm. And for millennials, there's this concept called workism, where we define ourselves much more by the work that we do in terms of our own personal identity. So a lot of us are working, we might not love our jobs, but we're working for more than just a paycheck. What we want from our employers is a little bit more than just money, if we're going to spend so much of our time doing it. And so we're proud of the work that we do. We want to feel like we have purpose and mission, especially when times are challenging or uncertain, which these last few years have certainly brought.
Right. And so I believe in what you're doing. That's why I wanted to have you on my program. I guess what I'm trying to grapple with is that how can we get management to embrace this, utilize this tool effectively so that the manager increase, the management team increases their emotional intelligence score, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that EQ is important.
Yeah. So how do you work with your new clients to implement this, you know, as effectively as possible?
Mm-hmm. And so you can talk to any company, I would say, within corporate wellness, and they're all going to have pretty much a similar mindset towards this, which is that leadership needs to be involved. It's if you put out something and just, you know, HR releases a newsletter and says, hey, we have this brand new benefit, feel free to use it. No one's going to use it, right? We need consistent promotion, as well as, and this is the most important part, you need to see people that you admire, you respect, not only doing it, but allowing you to have the time to do it, right? They need to be promoting it. That needs to be part of a cultural shift within an organization. And mm-hmm. so those are the types of clients that we love working with, are the ones that where you're getting buy-in all the way from the C-suite down. You're getting the CEOs letting us know that they're utilizing it, they're promoting it, and then we're doing trainings on top of that. It's everything's not just the software. We're doing in-person or digital workshops. We're doing live interactive sessions. And a lot of those are teaching social emotional learning skills to leadership and management. Mm-hmm. We often work in tech and in other industries where these are industries not known for having the highest EQ, right? These are hard technical skills. And so suddenly, especially during the pandemic, what we saw, there were such rapid shifts and changes towards responsibility, towards certainty, towards where you work or how you work or when you work. We were seeing all of that shift, and then leadership didn't know how to handle it. They didn't know how to build culture within a hybrid or remote team. They didn't know what to do when they were noticing that their employees were feeling overwhelmed or burnt out. And so suddenly a lot of them were feeling, hey, I'm not a therapist. I wasn't trained in mental health. Why do I have to check in with my teammates or things like that? And so we were seeing in front of our eyes the responsibilities of middle management suddenly shift. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we provide that training for them as well. We give them case studies, we do role-playing exercises, and then we give them on-demand tools, you know, ways to check in with your team, ways to build culture with remote workers, things like that. And so not only do the workers and the employees have different tools at their disposal, but then the management leadership have training. And then on top of that, it's being promoted by leadership, by HR, and it's something that is continuously being reminded. And that's really where you start seeing engagement rates and utilization rates start to rise. And in an industry that has notoriously low utilization rates, around 5%, something like that, we're about 10x that amongst our signature clients. We're about 50%. And I think that's largely because we work one-on-one with them to kind of make sure that what we're doing is being properly promoted, as well as that we're getting buy-in from the right parties.
And so what type of performance metrics do you look at in the very beginning to, and then measure afterwards to determine the effectiveness of the Suki the Saluki solution?
You can call it platform. It's fine. we change what we call it based on who the audience is. I would say, you know, it really depends. What we've gotten pretty good at doing is customize and building dashboards and pulse surveys to get an understanding of how people are feeling. And it's not really in order to showcase to the employer necessarily, this is how employee A or B feels. We never give that kind of data to them, and we aggregate all of it. But it's more important for us to have an understanding of how can we use that information to make the most effective programming. How do we know what are the topics? How can we, that will resonate with this community? How do we remove that guesswork? As well as how do we tell if this is actually working or not? Right. And so some of the things that we're looking at are pretty standard. We're going to look at the Net Promoter Score, which is really going to be, do you recommend this employer to a friend or family? Something as simple as that. Most products, even consumer products, will have that score. You know, if you buy something, if it's a toothbrush, are you going to recommend this toothbrush to the rest of your family? And so Net Promoter Score is big in terms of employers. We're also going to look at what are the stress levels like? What are people's work-life balance like? How much do they think that they're able to finish the work that they need to finish, and then their intention to stay, right? What is future attrition likely look like? And that's something that's of increasing importance, I would say, with a lot of great resignation going on, with this idea of people are shifting around a lot. And one of the reasons why they're shifting is because they're experiencing what we call a collective trauma. We've kind of experienced the loss of so many freedoms, so many aspects of our life over the past few years. And when that happens through a process called neuroplasticity, where our thoughts can actually reshape how our brains are wired, we're actually rethinking, well, how do I want to make money? What's my life purpose? How do I want to spend my money? Think about how you're spending your money right now compared to how you spent it 5 years ago. Chances are you're not doing the same things. Mm-hmm. And all of that is part of it, right? We're all changing rapidly right now. And so figuring that out, how likely are people to stay at an employer? And then we can use that information to see, well, perhaps certain types of employees are being affected more than others. And then how can we ramp up programming for certain types of employees to make sure that we're having an inclusive and sustainable work culture that really is helping people feel like they belong?
This is early days. You're building your business. Who have you seen to be the, I guess, the key leaders that you work with? Is it the CEO? Is it the HR department? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It depends on the industry. So we work with, we work a lot in academia. And so we do a good amount of work with MIT. We've done work with, you know, institutions all over Boston, the Northeast. And I would say that they actually have really thoughtful and proactive departments that are focused on employee wellness. Right. And
I'm curious, which departments are those?
The
provost? I mean, there's a lot of provosts, but I'm just trying to understand, like, who is the go-to folks within the academic institutions?
Yeah. And so it could be something as specific as the Center for Work-Life and Well-Being, where you actually have an institution created for addressing some of these social emotional skills or some of these work-life balance questions, things like that. It could be someone who's dealing with benefits. And so these are the same people who are thinking about childcare. They're thinking about your medical and dental plans, as well as wellness solutions, preventative solutions. Or it could be someone, and especially in the private sector, we've seen people who are really focused on learning and development and capacity building for their employees. When I was working in strategy consulting, one of the ways that we actually, it was part of our compensation package really, was the amount of learning that you would get. And so the same way you think about your salary, they're offering you personal growth. They're offering you tools, very tangible tools that make you a better employee, as well as just, these are tools you can use in all aspects of your life. And so anyone who's focused on learning and development for their employees, we actually work with them. And finally, I would say anyone who's focused on culture or events. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when people aren't doing our full solution, they're hiring us for speaking engagements, for lunch and learns, for retreats, things like that, where we're coming in and our wellness experts, our speakers and things like that to help create an event and curate that event.
Wow, this is really, really super. Over the last couple of weeks, I've had the opportunity, of course, to interact with you, There's a woman named Crystal Sun, who is a vocalist, frequency vocalist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and there's a gentleman named Troy Lavinia who has established a SOS, which is a spiritual operating system.
I want to see what that looks like.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, we get together once a day for 30 minutes. It's it just started, you know. So I just feel blessed that I'm just being pulled into all of these various different areas that's around mental health. That's around spirituality, calming spirit, you know, all of those good things. Well, this is great. So how does someone get in touch with you? How can they get started with your, I don't want to say platform.
Yeah, exactly.
with your system.
Yeah, you can create an account at SukhiProject.com, and that's Sukhi is spelled S-U-K. Yeah, S-U-K-H-I. So it's a Sanskrit word that means happiness, and so that's why you get that K-H. And so the SukhiProject.com, you can check that out. You can also, we're on the App Store, so people can create accounts. If you look up Sukhi Workplace Wellbeing, you can do that. Or I always like to be extremely accessible, especially as an entrepreneur, as someone, you know, working in a startup and building out our client base. And so my email address is just Rahul K, R-A-H-U-L-K, the letter K, at thesukhiproject.com. And that's another way to just get in contact.
And let's talk about some of the early success that some of your clients have achieved. What stories, without, of course, violating anyone's confidence? Sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, the reason why this feels worthwhile is that the impact that I'm doing, it feels so immediate. And you can feel it, you can talk to people, you can hear them out. A couple stories that come to mind. I remember one time I was working with this academic institution, and we did a group mindfulness exercise to start the day off right. And one person stayed afterwards and said, "You know what? This is the best I've ever felt without having to pay a copay." And I was like, "Yeah, this can be an alternative if, you know, towards something that involves a copay, if this is the right fit for you, if this is where you're at the moment." And so, you know, just hearing those stories, there is one tech company, they're predominantly based out of Africa, but I remember they had this huge sales team that was based out of Nigeria and East Africa and Kenya. And one of the things that they were really, really hit with was it was a high stress job. There's a lot of turnover and people didn't really feel like they, you know, people didn't really, really feel that attached to that institution. And by working with that company, and we were able to turn around that part of the organization, which was the biggest group in that organization, they had the least amount of client engagement engagement towards their employer. And they went from scoring the least to becoming the most engaged. And for us, that was an incredible kind of just story of change and evolution as this group of individuals, and there are hundreds and hundreds of people, just felt a little bit more connected to each other, as well as that organization. And then I would say one last story that I would want to mention was, I know there's been a lot of turnover recently, as well as a lot of new hires, a lot of people that have been onboarded in this new hybrid environment. And a lot of people haven't actually physically met any of their colleagues or their employers. They're working out of their bedrooms, they're working at home. And so one time, we do a lot of culturally specific work, and we work with ERGs or employee resource groups or cultural affinity groups within larger institutions. And one time we were working with this one client, they had an Asian ERG group. And at the end of it, a woman stayed afterwards and she said, "You know what? I'm a new hire. I haven't been to any events. I haven't even been on, you know, to work physically ever again or ever yet. And they were saying, this is the first time I actually feel like I belong here. And that sense of belonging, that sense of building community, you know, it, that's what it's all about. That's why that we do it. And it just so happens to be in a professional setting or in a work setting. But then again, we that's where we spend most of our time. I think it's, I heard a stat the other day, I think it was about 100,000 hours, something like that. That's how many hours we work in a lifetime. And, you know, so if you can affect people where they're spending majority of their time, to me, that's something important.
That's great. Well, believe it or not, we are out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Rahul K, who's the founder and CEO of Suki. And we want to thank you for coming on the program, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up this week on Darrell Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM. Have a great day, but remember, leadership begins with you.